Hello, it's on. All right, I called this meeting to order. And it is now 1 minute after one, so we've already lost 1 minute of the day. Jane, would you please call the roll?
Abramovich.
Present.
Albertson.
Here.
I heard you online.
Okay.
Alexiev.
Here.
Bondopadhyay.
Present.
Bret Hart. Anyone attending for Donnie Bret Hart? Okay, Brian Rasley is here for Donnie. Brown.
Julie Cassio is online for Brown.
Thank you. C. Chambers.
Here.
Chen. Anyone attending for Chang Fu Chen?
Yes, Fai Goodman.
Ah, Falk. Falk is here. Cook. Anyone attending for Christine Cook? Davis.
Juan Ihua. That's you pick for here.
Thank you. Fallon. Focisato.
Yes,
George Bettisworth.
Here.
Gustafson. Karen Gustafson. Hardy. Cindy. Sarah Hardy.
Yes.
Healy.
Here.
Heaton.
Here.
Thank you. Henry.
Here.
Jensen.
Here.
Johnston.
Here.
Jolie. Larden.
Here.
Lawler.
Here.
Marr.
Here.
McCackern. Diane McCackern. Meyer.
Here.
Nadine. Okay. Anyone here for Elizabeth? Newberry. Later. Chung Sang. Okay. Radenbo. Todd. Reynolds.
Here.
Short.
Here.
Valentine.
Here.
Weber.
Here.
Webley. Peter. Winfrey.
Here.
Windsor. Yari.
Here.
Zhang. Okay, and I'll acknowledge, is Debu here?
Yes.
Hi, Kate. Debu is here for United Academics. Libby Eddy. Okay, Lily and Mysel is here for Libby. Anyone here for Staff Council? Okay, ASUAS. Okay, and we have Dean Paul Lair, Eric Manson. We have the provost. I don't see the chancellor yet. We have past president, John Dean. Okay, thank you.
Excellent. All right, moving on. The minutes to last meeting were distributed online. Are there any comments or corrections to those minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Are there any additions or amendments to the agenda for today? Seeing none, the agenda is approved. The motion that was passed in our last meeting, the motion to amend the student probation policy, has been approved by the Chancellor. There are no other motions pending. And moving on to my remarks, I have two subjects I want to comment on. One is the Strategic Directions Initiative. Just a quick update to let you know that the input to the statewide offices so far is being organized sorted, distilled, and prioritized. That's an ongoing effort. They are not yet close to a draft of a strategic plan. So the Faculty Alliance will be looking at this latest iteration of collating and organizing and prioritizing the comments. We expect to look at that this month. You all may hear something substantive by beginning of next semester. That's my best guess. I believe the Chancellor is going to talk a bit more about this in his remarks. The other topic is the reapportionment of the Faculty Senate. The Provost's Office has provided the faculty counts. Because I already had a spreadsheet set up for this from running the calculation 2 years ago, I did a preliminary calculation. This will need to be double-checked and verified by the Faculty Affairs Committee, but I can tell you preliminary results of this, which I think are correct, and they are that the overall size of the Faculty Senate will increase from 39 to 41. The library will gain two representatives and an alternate, so they will be separately represented. There are several other units whose numbers of senators change. Two of them will decrease. CEM will decrease from 4 to 3, and CLA decreases from 8 to 7. That the CLA decrease is expected because they're losing the library senator. Two units increase. CNSM increases from 6 to 7, and SFOS increases from 3 to 4. All other units would stay the same. As I said, that is a preliminary. We need to make sure it's correct, but to give you all an idea of what happened. Are there any questions? All right, remarks from our President-elect, David Valentine.
So I'd like to cover two things. In my remarks, one is the General Education Revitalization Committee. I want to thank all of you who filled out the survey, which closed last Friday, so that's why I put it in the past tense. If you didn't do it, oh well. The analysis of those data will be proceeding with great vigor and enthusiasm. We got in the neighborhood of about 200 responses, so that was good. The focus right now for GERC is going to be on, while the survey was ongoing, the committee has focused its efforts on trying to take the learning outcomes that are essentially our targets and turning them into more specific statements about both the goals, specific goals for students through their general education curriculum, as well as how they'll be assessed. And this is going to be the necessary and difficult work that GERC will be proceeding on for the rest of the year. The second thing I wanted to talk about is something that came up in some conversations that seemed to merit looking at a little bit more formally, and that is that throughout much of our work we've been encouraged and have often sought to reach across disciplinary lines both in our teaching and research. And this is viewed as largely a good thing in an increasing complex society and education environment. It makes a lot of sense to do that. But at the same time, in the course of trying to seek doing those things, we run up against structures or procedures that seem to get in the way one way or the other. For example, how is tuition allocated in a course that's taught across departments, for example. And it seemed to us that this may be worth forming an ad hoc committee, essentially that is charged with looking at impediments, problems, hiccups, bumps, however you like to see it, on the way towards doing more interdisciplinary research, advising, and teaching. And so after the Senate meeting today, if it's not done already, there will be an online discussion posted, essentially where we'll be seeking names of people who might be interested in sitting on that committee. The charge right now being just the identification of problems. Solutions and whatnot are a bit further down the line, but it seems a good starting place is to at least understand what are the roadblocks and impediments that are getting in the way. And are there any questions, comments?
Okay. Thank you. Since Chancellor Rogers is not yet here, we would move on to the provost remarks.
Well, as Jennifer mentioned, the Chancellor will be speaking a bit, I believe, based on what happened at the pre-Senate meeting on SDI and also on budget, so I won't cover those two topics. One thing that has been occupying a lot of my time over the past couple of weeks is a research report that is going to be presented at the Board of Regents meeting for the December meeting, the next week's or this week's meeting of the Board of Regents is solely about budget. And that research report is turning up some interesting information. I have been charged with comparing not only UAF's output, but also UAA's and UAS's to some peer institutions. UAF does very well in terms of comparisons to peer institutions on several measures. For example, something that I've been working up is the number of publications per faculty member and the number of citations per paper and metrics like that. And we generally tend to be in the upper half of our defined peer institutions on those measures, and sometimes at the very top. So I think we'll be able to show the Regents that we're a pretty productive institution in the area of research and that we are easily the equal of many of our peers across the country, as we already knew, of course, internally, but we're trying to show this information in a way that will be clear to the board and help to indicate to them the value of what's done in research. Mark Myers is also working on some research presentations by researchers that will occur during the lunch period. That's become the tradition at Board of Regents meetings is that lunch on one of the days is taken up by reports from the institution. And so he's got a number of exciting and interesting things ranging from creative activity in art to unmanned aerial vehicles. And again, we hope that these presentations are going to provide further convincing evidence to the Board of Regents that research is an important activity of the university that's worthy of support. As far as the metric report that I'm putting together, I will provide a copy of that to Jane to put up on the website for people to look at once it's done. It probably won't be done for a couple of weeks yet, as it needs to undergo a lot of review before it's deemed appropriate for the Board of Regents. We've got a pretty careful vetting of anything that goes forward to the board. So that's been my couple of weeks in addition to routine work. So I'll let the Senate proceed with its business. Thank you. All right, we'll move on to new business. We are ahead of schedule by about 15 minutes, but we will come back to the Chancellor's remarks when he's available. The first item of new business is number A, a motion to agree to the discontinuation of the MS degree in general science. This is attachment 186.1 in your agenda. The motion reads, the UAF Faculty Senate agrees to discontinuation of the MS degree in general science. You have been provided the review materials from the program review process last year. There is some background and information provided here in the motion as well. We have invited the physics department, which runs this degree, to submit a statement to Faculty Senate, and they declined. They didn't feel that was necessary. So now I open the floor to any discussion. All right, shall we go ahead and vote? Oh, yes, Debu, go ahead.
Quick question. By the deletion of this program, are there any faculty being affected, is the question. I haven't read. I apologize.
No, the background of this program is that there are no students enrolled, and there haven't been for some time. So there have been no faculty teaching courses in this program.
So
as far as I know, there are not actually specific courses specific to this program either. That's correct.
Okay.
So no, this would not affect. Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay.
Can
Yes, please come up and state your name.
So my name is Mark Conte. I'm a faculty member in the physics department, and I'm here speaking largely on my own behalf. But I have been involved in all the meetings where we've discussed these program eliminations, including this one. And I think it's fair to say that the physics department is completely mystified by why the university would actually want to eliminate any of these programs, given that what we do is we teach a series of classes and we package them up into various degree offerings. It doesn't actually cost the university anything to have these things on the books, but it does provide students with an opportunity to take some subset of courses that we package up into a particular way. So as far as, I think I speak for my colleagues, although I haven't polled every one of them on this particular subject, but for all these program eliminations, we're not talking about eliminating any program that actually costs the university any money to offer, but we are taking away for choice from the students by not allowing them to take that particular package of classes and assigning a degree name to it. So to me, and I think to many of my colleagues, that this is something that just makes no sense. And every time we make that point, we're told, well, no one's been enrolled, but we don't really see that there's any downside to that, and there is a significant upside in that the students can, if they want to take a particular degree with a particular title on their degree certificate, they can do that. So I'm just here to say that these particular ones we didn't object to largely because we were told not to, and we were told that programs would be eliminated. There's a number coming up that we care a lot more about. These ones that have had very few students in them, we figured, well, it wasn't really worth trying to oppose them. But there are some others, like the MS in Space Physics, that have been a very important part of our program, and they're scheduled for elimination. And so none of this makes any sense to most of us, and that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, and just for everyone's reference, the other programs that he's talking about are not on your list today. So don't need to look at the agenda for those. It may be important for a Faculty Senate to understand the reasons behind eliminating a program of this type. So, Provost Emmerichs, would you like to comment on that?
There are several reasons why there are programs of this type up for elimination. One of the main ones is simply that in this particular case, no students at all have enrolled in the program for many years. You can argue that it doesn't hurt anything to keep it, but you can also argue that it doesn't accomplish anything either. There's a second issue with the program cost. It's minimal, that's true. This is an interdisciplinary program where the courses would, if a student enrolled, would be drawn from other departments and physics. There are courses that would be taught for master's degrees in other areas anyway. But there is a small cost, and it's an administrative cost. We're increasingly required to do program review, student learning outcomes assessment, various accreditation reports, and each time we have to report on this program and carry it through the process because it's on the books and it's one we're required to do. So there's that administrative overhead, and it's a modest cost, but it's not a zero cost. The final reason, though, is external scrutiny and pressure. The Board of Regents looks at our program and degree list every year similarly, perhaps mystified that we retain degree programs that have no students. This is something that I address with them each year. I explain that the cost is very low, but it's still a question that gets raised year after year. And then the final reason is that the Board of Regents has specifically required of the provost that if we're going to be adding new programs, we need to eliminate some that we have. They see a proliferation of programs as, in their words, not a good thing. I don't necessarily agree with that position, but I am not in a position to say, no, Board of Regents, I'm not going to follow your instructions. And so I'm supportive of eliminating those programs where the impact will be as small as possible. If I have to meet a requirement of that nature, I'm going to eliminate the programs where that will be least harmful. Any discussion?
Can I respond to that?
Can I just ask, first of all, why was this program in existence in the first place? Was there a need for it in the past, and is there any kind of anticipation of being in need for the future?
To the best of my knowledge, it was probably established as a teacher's degree with the idea that individuals interested in teaching high school in several different disciplines, you know, where there might be a demand for a teacher that was somewhat expert in several different fields, that they might qualify in this way. But it hasn't panned out in terms of there actually being a demand for someone to take the degree. And I don't anticipate that occurring in the future, although there are more and more requirements federally, for example, for highly qualified teachers. There are other routes for people attaining that seem to be more attractive to them, either by testing or by taking teacher-specific degrees that don't have the same sorts of degrees that this MS General Science does.
Can I make offer one response? Or?
Sure, go ahead.
So just the one thing I wanted to say in response to that was the comment that these low enrollment programs achieve nothing. And I think that the reality is what they achieve is they offer choice to the students. So whether or not the students choose to exercise that is their business. But by saying to the students, you have the option of taking this package and receiving a degree with this title, you know, we're providing something to the students that I think is valuable to them. So whether or not they choose to exercise that option is something that's really a matter for the students. But you know, I think as was just said, the cost is minimal. We are not opposing a couple of these programs because, you know, we're trying to return something to the pool so new courses or new programs can be created. But to say that low enrollment programs achieve nothing, I think, is incorrect for that reason. Thank you.
All right. Any more comments on this motion?
I have a question. This is Izetta on the line.
Yes, Izetta.
I was just wondering if this is going to affect any interdisciplinary study students who might choose to combine a degree program and have general science as part of their interdisciplinary studies degree?
I would say not. An interdisciplinary program, by definition, doesn't require any underpinning of a specific degree program. The general science master's program was made up of courses from a variety of different departments. Those courses are still being offered, and so if the interdisciplinary student was taking some of those courses, he or she would be unaffected as well. So I can't imagine an effect on interdisciplinary students.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments? Yes, Ken.
I'll make a comment where it's stated that the students have a choice. I think what we might need to do is accept the fact that in times of limited resources, we might want to respect the student's choice over the last many years that they simply do not take it. And we can't keep everything open forever. And the fact is they did make a choice for many, many years.
Anyone else? Yes.
Are we going to vote on all four of these at once? Or
no, separately.
All right.
Yeah. All right, let's vote on this motion. All those in favor of this passing this motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
Any abstentions? Two abstentions. Three abstentions. All right, the motion carries. Chancellor Rogers has joined us, so let's move back to Chancellor's remarks.
First, I apologize for being late. I was down at the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce Board meeting. They were working on legislative priorities for the year, and I wanted to make sure that the university was still in their legislative priorities. I want to talk about a couple things, budget, Strategic Directions Initiative are the key items. The Board of Regents meets on Wednesday to adopt the operating and capital budget for the university system. They're looking at about $6 million in new program requests, $6.2 million. UAS done relatively well in that, with about 45% of the new money asks being UAF-specific asks in the areas of student achievement, in the fisheries, seafood, and maritime initiative, some health programs, the Consolidated Alaska Mining Initiative, some workforce development, and then a series of research increments. So relatively well overall, assuming the board adopts this. Even more so, the fixed cost request is very significant, because this year we have the life sciences building coming on, and so it's really important that we get operating costs so that we can actually operate the life sciences building. We're on the hook for paying debt service for that building with indirect cost recovery, so it's that's a significant issue for us. The president announced last week one of the other fixed cost items is compensation for staff. The president is recommending to the board for non-represented staff a 3.25% increase in staff compensation for next year. The budget also includes, we ask the state generally to fund 50 to 60% of the of pay raise money. I'm not sure which that's ending up. We've asked for 60 in the past few years. We've received 50. It also includes all the negotiated increases, of course, for the faculty contracts for UAFT, UNAC, and the adjuncts. The one other, Local 6070, is still under negotiation. Other operating cost increases, the key ones are utilities and other new facility operations. So assuming the board adopts that, then it's our job to go out and start advocating for it. On the capital budget side, only one thing in the way of new facilities, and that's the second half of the funding for the engineering building. In addition, significant money for deferred maintenance of facilities generally. That deferred maintenance includes planning and design money for the new heat and power plant. On strategic directions, the SDI themes, UAF has suggested several modifications to themes and topics. I think many of the suggestions, and I want to credit Provost Susan Henricks for her usual superb work in editing documents and trying to make sense of things in addressing the topics within the SDI themes and suggesting a framework for how we look at this system-wide initiative. As I mentioned last month, I do think the SDI themes do integrate well with UAS strategic plan, that we're in alignment there. But I do think we want to we need to engage in this process, because the SDI themes, those directions will affect us going forward. And I appreciate the Faculty Alliance. I know you're meeting on it later in the month. Finally, several people have asked about Women's Center Advisory Committee. I delayed appointments because I had not received very many nominations, but that letter of appointment is going out. It's sitting on my computer ready to go as soon as I get back to the office this afternoon. I appreciate the Faculty Senate being the one governance group that was very good in forwarding names. So thank you. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions anybody has.
Doug.
Hi, this is a question for the Chancellor and perhaps the Provost. I wondered if you both could, or one of you could, speak to the proposed weekend college that has been discussed recently. Several faculty members in the English department, which I represent, have expressed concerns or questions about this move.
At this point, the weekend college is merely a proposal and is a proposed experiment. We're not intending anything large or permanent at this stage. What we want to find out is whether there's any student demand for this format. When Michelle Bartlett, the director of Summer Sessions, came to me with the idea, I instructed her that I didn't want to set up competition with the weekday classes, that if this was going to be a good idea, that it should either draw in new students or help to accommodate students that were being shut out of closed sections. So I asked her to focus on courses that were full, ones where, you know, every section or nearly every section was occupied and students were on waiting lists. And the motivation is simply to accommodate more students. Right now, I imagine, although I haven't heard back from her discussions with Dean Sherman yet, I imagine that it's going to be limited to only a few courses, perhaps three or four. And again, what we really want to find out is whether there's student demand for this. Summer Sessions can undertake these sorts of experiments with minimal risk because 100% of the tuition is returned to them. If it turns out to be a good idea, then we can talk about how this should work.
Thank you.
If I could respond as well, I think clearly higher education in this country is seeing huge transformation right now, and I think the things like the massive online courses, moving toward trying to respond more to specific constituencies and their needs, clearly we're going to be impacted by this. And I think this kind of experiment is useful to us to assess the demand. I think we're going to be in a situation where we have to think about how far we go in different models and what the fiscal implications are and the quality implications are for those alternatives. I think that I've seen other universities move too rapidly to try to embrace change for the sake of change. I've seen campus presidents lose their jobs for not moving fast enough and then get the job back again. And I think it's important that we be deliberate in thinking about about alternatives to our primary modes of delivery. I think it's been really good to see the experimentation that Summer Sessions has done to expand student options through the expansion of Summer Sessions over the last several years, through Maymester and Wintermester, understanding that that creates some challenges both logistically and quality-wise. And in this case, I don't think we have the shortened course issue at all, but it will challenge us in terms of fiscal model. We can't close our eyes to what's happening elsewhere, but we also need not rush headlong into what's happening elsewhere. So I think this kind of a judicious first step helps us understand what's there. I think both Susan and I are committed to the importance of the decisions on faculty who are going to teach any of our courses residing at the departmental level.
I appreciate your deliberation on this. I think that really is very important not to rush into things. I think what I'm concerned about is that we sort of increasingly have three semi-independent units that are almost in competition with each other on campus, and I worry about the impact on faculty and resources for programs, and also the academic integrity of programs, the more spread out they are to units who have somewhat different policies and rules and goals and missions. Are there thoughts about integrating all instructional activities under the colleges again in some way?
If I could respond, particularly with UAFE Learning and Distance Education, which I assume is one of the three you're talking about, the reorganization this June that moved e-learning out of one of the colleges and into the chancellor's office with the decision that over the course of this year, transitioning all of the credit hour production out of that unit back into the originating departments, colleges, and schools was for the very issue you raise. I saw it as becoming a competitive situation, and I see the e-learning office as the opportunity for creating a similar front end for students, for marketing for students, for advising faculty and students on online learning issues, but not itself a credit hour producing entity, but rather a means to assist departments in credit hour production. I think the issue summer sessions was originally how do we use facilities that are not in use and how do we create new opportunities for students. And I think the fact that the departments retain control over decisions on who is qualified to teach a course the assurance that we need.
Any other comments or questions? Yes, Brian.
I have one kind of technical question. I guess you'd mentioned the life sciences building, and there's some kind of debt recovery structure. So I guess why are we having to do that? I thought they passed a bond issue for that exactly.
The legislature passed a bond issue. The total project for life sciences plus the Utilidor plus the construction of the greenhouse that was being displaced was a $108.6 million project. The bond issue passed by the voters was for $88 million, with the other 20 being a borrowing by UAS. And essentially that was done because a portion of that building is research-oriented and under the concept that the research does generate some indirect cost recovery and that we use a portion of indirect cost recovery for research. The same thing will be is the case on the engineering building. In that case, $10 million out of the $10 million will be internal bonds, and $98 million roughly is a state general fund.
Do you know if the, I don't know if I'm phrasing it right, the Anchorage Sports Arena is going to have some kind of similar, I mean, I'm just out of curiosity. I mean, you know, we're going to wind up paying over $100 million for that thing.
The Anchorage Sports Arena does not have any self-bonding by UAA. There is discussion on the Anchorage campus of the need for a student recreational facility. And as you're probably aware, our students voted to tax themselves $75 a semester to pay for our student recreation center. My assumption is that Anchorage that the Board of Regents would expect the same of Anchorage students, but that would be a decision by the board and UAA. I'm confident that our decision to self-bond for portions of our project is part of what led to our advancing the project and is a worthwhile price to pay, although it does create a challenge for us, and we did the same with the Westridge Research Building. That was internally funded and not externally funded. So UAF, I think, has a stronger history of self-paying for facilities than other units. And the Wood Center addition also will be self-paid out of dining housing revenue.
Yes, go ahead.
I was just wondering about update on OMED and if there's a place for students to meet or if the committee has met and what the progress is.
That committee has been appointed. I have not heard anything from the committee yet, the task force on the Student Diversity Task Force, so I haven't heard back from them yet. They've just started meeting.
Karen?
I have a
a quick question regarding the department maintaining decisions over who teaches in the three other areas, particularly for summer sessions. I know that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there are agreements made with some outside agencies as to them actually maintaining who teaches. I'm talking about the Summer Arts Festival.
Well, the Summer Arts Festival is not a summer sessions activity. The Summer Arts Festival is an independent organization.
Right.
And it's not, to the best of my knowledge, offering college credit for any of its activities. They're non-credit kind of classes, but they're not really offered under the auspices of the university. There are certainly many university people that are engaged with them in one way or another, but it's a separate organization. No, I can say definitely that the chancellor is correct, and that if either e-learning or summer sessions has somebody teaching a class, it's somebody that was approved by the department as being qualified to teach the class.
Are 500 level classes then considered?
500 level classes are professional development classes taught in under the auspices of public schools, and so yes, there is some approval of the instructor, but it's a little bit different organizationally. Cecile,
just a quick comment, and this kind of goes for summer sessions and to some extent for CDE. While it's true that the departments have the original approval for the instructor, there's no mechanism built in for review of those instructors over a longer period of time, or what they do over a longer period of time. So, and I know that we've been told at some point that, you know, somebody we did not want to continue teaching a particular course, said, well, you approved them at some point, and so, you know, we have the right to have them continue to teach that course. So I think if we move forward with this, there has to be more integration with the department and more continuing reviews over who teaches and how those courses are taught and fit into the department curriculum.
I'm aware that there have been occasional disagreements about specific instructors, but those are uncommon. They're not the rule. They're definitely the exception as far as I know. Both summer sessions and e-learning are very interested in having quality instruction, and they will let instructors go if they detect a problem with their instruction. If you have a particular instance where you feel that an instructor that summer sessions is using, now e-learning is under the chancellor, so you have to contact him about e-learning, but if you have a particular instance where you feel that an inappropriate instructor is being used by summer sessions, bring that to my attention. If I'm not aware of a situation, there's not a lot that I can do. I am, however, an advocate of having more of our instruction directly supervised by the deans in the department, as opposed to being parceled out into different administrative units. I've always been an advocate of that. I am trying to work toward more involvement of the departments, or ultimately complete oversight by the department. But the financial models and other issues mean that we can't, again, sometimes moving too fast is worse than not moving at all. We have to proceed deliberately to make changes, otherwise we're going to disrupt what are basically some pretty successful organizations.
Can you get anything else? Seeing none, we'll move on. Chancellor Rogers, thank you very much for joining us. We are going now to new business number B, the second motion about program discontinuations. This is your attachment 2, and the motion reads, the UAF Faculty Senate agrees to discontinuation of the MAT degree in physics. And as with the other one that we discussed earlier, you have had access to all the program review documents, and there's a summary here in the motion itself. Is there any discussion of this motion? Yes, Debu, go ahead.
I just have the same question. In any of these motions that we are going to eliminate programs, are we eliminating faculty?
First of all, I would point out that the summary and the review materials for this program state that, in particular, the MAT in physics has had no students enrolled and no graduates since at least FY06. I think one could conclude reasonably from that that it wouldn't affect faculty. Anything else?
I just want to mention something.
Yes, go ahead, Javier.
In canceling the PhD program in mathematics, this will eventually hamper the university to get very good faculty, because if
sure.
I look at...
Can I stop you for just a minute? We're going to talk about that one.
No, but he, since he brought over all the listing, I believe.
Okay. Might be better if we focus on that when we get to that motion. Okay, yeah, thank you. Okay, anything else on the MAT program, in MAT degree in physics? No? All right, let's vote on the motion. Yes, no. All right, Cindy.
Just a question about the MAT degrees in general. Are we just not using those? I know at one point that was one route to certification in a particular discipline. Are we not using them at all in any field, or is it just in this area that they're not being used?
None of the MAT degrees have had any graduates in the past couple of years. Only the MAT in mathematics has had any graduates in more than 10 years. So by and large, this is just not a route that students are taking.
All right, let's vote on the motion. All those in favor of this motion, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Are there any abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. The next one is your attachment 3. We now move on to the mathematics programs. This motion states the UAF Faculty Senate agrees to discontinuation of the MAT degree in mathematics. And noting the follow-up on some of the questions we've had on the earlier ones, I note that the background information says that there has been only one MAT mathematics student enrolled and two degrees awarded since FY06. Enrollment has been zero since FY08. Okay, is there any discussion on this one? Yes.
So back in September, we eliminated the MAT in biology. We just eliminated the MAT in physics. And if we get rid of the MAT in mathematics, those are all the MAT degrees. This is the last one.
Mm-hmm. And yes, it's just an observation that you're making?
Yep.
Okay. I would also point out, and I should have done this a moment ago, we invited the chair of the Mathematics and Statistics Department to submit a comment on this, and you will see that here. I don't know if it's a separate attachment, but it's right after the motion in your agenda. It's about a page and a quarter. And this comments on both the MAT program in mathematics and on the PhD. So the first paragraph is the relevant portion on the MAT program in mathematics, which essentially says the department recommends that this program be deleted as recommended by the program review process, and then goes on to make a few comments about it. Okay, so just make sure that you all are aware of this statement. Is there any more discussion on this particular program? All right, let's vote on the motion then. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? The motion carries unanimously. All right, the last one is number D, and it's attachment 5 in your agenda. The UAF Faculty Senate agrees to discontinuation of the PhD degree in mathematics. This is the main subject of the statement from the the Chair of Department of Mathematics and Statistics, and I believe this is the one that Javier wanted to comment on. So please go ahead, Javier.
Yes, what I wanted to comment
is... Could you speak into the microphone?
Yes, what I wanted to say is that, a program having a PhD, a department having a PhD program, allows for to hire a faculty that actually are effectively teaching and doing research at the top level. So for instance, if I weren't in a PhD granted department, I would not be here actually. So I don't know, but I think that there has to be a thinking about that in terms of how the department actually hires the faculty, and initially the faculty wants to develop research, and in that research at the high level is the PhD education. So that's why I think that I disagree with this. So I reviewed in 2006 the mathematical program, and we have this discussion. And I know that they have been a number of problems because there's not that many number of PhD students. But mathematics is in all our science.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't do physics without mathematics.
Yes, and so your comments are at a general level of the importance of PhDs to science departments.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yes, please go ahead.
Javier, you are right. But see, if you look at School of Engineering, School of Middle Engineering, we didn't have a PhD program. We could retain higher good faculty. We still have a program called Interdisciplinary PhD program. If we need, we can go through that route.
Yes. Go ahead, Margaret.
I'm the statistics portion, representing the statistics portion of the math and statistics department. And I am totally on Javier's side on this. I think it will be a major blow to the department to lose the ability to grant PhDs. One thing that I'm kind of curious about here, it says there's something in this statement that you said came from the head of the math department to the effect that where is the sentence in here? About the person who's been, got the wrong pair of glasses on here. The faculty member who has served as major professor for all recent PhD students has left UAF. And is this somebody's way of telling me something that I didn't know? Because this is referring to Sergei Avdinin, who from everything I've been told all along is that he's on sabbatical. Sabbatical, 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 and are you now telling me that the guy is gone?
Can I interrupt and answer?
Let's ask.
I'm in the math department, so I could answer.
Well,
or Tony could.
We can hear the response out there, I think. Go ahead.
Well, we know the answer to the question. My
name is Tony Rickard. I'm the chairman of the Mathematics and Statistics Department. Professor Avdanin's on a leave of absence right now. He's not on sabbatical.
May I be recognized? Okay, so most of you don't know me. My name's Elizabeth Allman. I'm in the Math and Stats Department. I'm going to try to hold this in my hand. I'm a professor, actually, and I have to say that I think it would be a pretty devastating blow to eliminate our PhD degree. But actually, I want to address the motion that's at hand, so I'm going to have to switch around here because I wrote notes on my computer. So one of the things that the rationale says is that the Faculty Program Review Committee recommended two considerations, and the second of which is some time to make clear the reasons for continuation of this program. And so what I'd really like to advocate is that you consider suspending the program for 3 years rather than deleting it, so we have time to actually make such a argument about why this is integral to our program of mathematics and to the state of Alaska and generally to mathematical literacy. And I have a few points that I would include just personally for why I want the PhD to continue. First of all, a majority of our math faculty want it to continue. There's interest in the program. It's never going to be a big program. That's the way we are. Mathematics is an incredible discipline. It's integrally related to other CNSM disciplines and potentially other ones, and there's lots of opportunities for collaboration there. The other thing, so there's a line there that says there's no consequences of a budgetary, personnel, or there are four things listed there. I have to say on the personnel, I think there's an incredible impact if you delete the PhD program. So morale, personally, and I think for a good number of my colleagues, I think recruitment would be more difficult. And there's prestige. There's things like applying for grants, which we will be at an incredible disadvantage. And I'm actually one of the more active researchers in the department, so this means a lot to me personally. Okay, and then the other thing I think that shouldn't be underestimated is the importance of training actually future teachers in the state of Alaska so that they can teach at remote outposts. And that's something we could do a better job on, and it's important. And I don't know, I think we might be disturbing the state of Alaska in that way. And I don't want to say too much because we want to move the meeting along, and I've made my point. Thank you.
Could I ask a point of clarification? Would you please explain why you have chosen 3 years as the time period that you're requesting?
Well, actually, Leah Berman, who's a colleague of mine in math and statistics, was in contact with someone who I believe is on Faculty Senate. She couldn't come to this meeting today because she teaches, and she would have been a better choice than me, probably. And so I guess she was contacted, and the suggestion was made to ask, rather than having the program be deleted, to have a suspension with 3 years. And I think it's actually in your rationale, right? I think it must be personal communication to her. I think 1 year would be fine. That was just a random number that was reported to me.
Tony, do you have any knowledge about the three-year period?
The 3 years, as Elizabeth has mentioned, my understanding is that was a time frame that was suggested to our colleague, Leah Berman. In terms of how we proceed, we'd have 1 year to make sure we had curriculum changes to support the PhD program, another year for recruitment, and a third year for enrollment. I mean, that's how I've interpreted the time frame for the three-year suspension.
Yes.
Another comment. I could all guess people from my accent. I'm not from this state or this country. A university without a PhD in mathematics, when you're promoting STEM, is massive. Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and you don't have a PhD in mathematics, and you're promoting mathematics into the high schools, and you say, oh, come to UEF, but you can't go beyond the master's program for your math. You have to go out of state. That's detrimental to UEF as a whole, to UA as a whole, not to have a PhD in mathematics at its major research university. It's detrimental to the promotion of UEF abroad, to international organizations, if you don't have a PhD in mathematics. Okay, there's not many students coming in, but I see, okay, removing it will, there'll be little financial differences. However, I think as a whole to UAF, a PhD, with no PhD in mathematics internationally is a real problem in the international arena. That's my thoughts.
Yes, Orion.
So I definitely agree that it's really, it's easy to get rid of a PhD, and it would be a real fight to actually get it put back in. So if we actually do want it back after, I mean, if we agreed to delete it here, that's going to be extremely difficult. And, of course, if nobody's taking it, then there's no reason to leave it on the books. But I noticed the enrollment was zero back in 1999, and the program there were students actually got degrees. Two PhDs is actually a fairly substantial fraction of the production in a given year, right? That we only have a few dozen for all of UAF. So having one or two actually sounds like a successful program to me, right? So for the last 5 years, they've had two, and they happen to have zero at the moment. That we just don't have that many PhDs, right? That sounds okay to me. I don't see the rationale as a really convincing argument to delete the program.
Cecile?
When you look at the enrollment data since 06, the number of students enrolled has gone down instead of up. So my question to the department is, if this program is so important, why didn't you guys sort of see your downward trend and work to revitalize the program at that point instead of waiting until, you know, somebody says, well, there are no students. Not only are there no students now, but they've been decreasing. They must, you know, there's something going on, and we may need to eliminate the program. So again, if it's so important, why not action earlier?
So I'm going to answer one part of that question, and then I think I'm going to turn over the second part to Tony, unless he wants me to continue. But one thing is that the enrollment information isn't entirely accurate, because the department actually changed the admissions criterion that you had to have a master's in mathematics before you applied for a PhD, to be a PhD student. So we actually accepted students into our master's program who had the intent of becoming PhD students after they finished their master's. So for instance, we had two last year who came in, one of whom we still have who, as a master's student, and the second of whom switched over to get a statistics degree. Now I think in terms of recruitment and growth, Tony, you probably would do a better job.
I just would add that over the last several years, mathematics and statistics has created guidelines for specifically for the PhD program for comprehensive exams, dissertation, defense, and expectations that reflect what Elizabeth just mentioned about students enrolling in the program with a master's degree already, which was not there earlier when we didn't have that requirement. So there have been steps taken by the department the last several years to strengthen the PhD program and reflect the requirement of a master's degree to enter the program.
Can I ask a question regarding the advisors? Are these master's students who are interested in a PhD, are their advisors someone other than Sergei Adonin?
So no, that's the one we have that's remained, was going to be Sergei's student. And I know he's spoken to a colleague in the math department about having him be his advisor. But my guess is it's only for a master's. I don't know whether it was to continue with the PhD, because obviously his initial plans can't be fulfilled right now.
Cecile?
Just a quick follow-up question. How would you fill courses with only two students in the program?
Well, the design already has a tremendous amount of independent study worked in. And so I think there's not a unanimous opinion in the department, but one of the models I think put forward by Sergei Avdanin, which I actually very much believe in right now, is a student might come to UAF to actually work with me. And there's never going to be coursework at UAF for the things I do. So there's going to be a lot of independent studies, a lot of writing papers together, and it's what I would call a more European, sorry for the Western-centric viewpoint, but a more European model of getting a PhD, or even a UK or a Commonwealth sort of model, where it's really the traction, or Russia, I guess. Anyway, I just mean where it's really a student comes to work with an individual. And so the classwork, how we have it right now, is it's really independent study with examinations by current faculty.
Yes, Margaret.
I'd like to add one more note here on from kind of a more personal perspective on this being in the stats part of the department. The statistics part of the department currently has a master's program. And I, for one, think it's kind of a good aspirational sort of thing to think in terms of someday having a PhD program in statistics as well. But I can say pretty much flat out that if the PhD in mathematics goes away, that pretty much puts an end to the possibility of having a PhD program in statistics. So it's kind of a forward-looking thing for us as well.
Ken.
Having served on GAC in the past, I know how extensively new programs are going to be reviewed, and it's not simply at our level. It's going all the way up through the administration, all the way through the Board of Regents. And knowing the importance of mathematics here and the views expressed and the passionate concern from the faculty, I would really recommend that we go slow on this and defer to to them, give them extra time to reestablish this program. I think it would be very unwise for us to go through and eliminate a program when we might want to get it back in a couple of years and then have to go through an uphill battle to try to get back.
Yes, go ahead, Brett Falk.
Just one more question. If the elimination of a PhD program in mathematics would affect the accreditation process across universities, because we get ranked in a certain way, and if we offer degree programs such as PhDs in mathematics, are we then still considered to be a serious university in the eyes of the credibility?
It wouldn't have any effect on institutional accreditation. There are a number of different ranking systems, but the Carnegie system, which is one of the primary ones, judges by the total number of doctoral degrees awarded and broadly in what fields, for instance, STEM fields or humanities fields, but it doesn't count the number of degrees that are offered or look for degrees in particular disciplines. I'll just add that I had an extensive conversation with the mathematics department at the end of the last program review about 5 years ago, my message to them is summarized in the motion. And so there was a lot of communication with them about at that time about the need to have more students and the need to have, perhaps more important to me at that time and still, is the need to have more faculty involved in mentoring the students. Recently, there has only been one, and to me, that's an individual. It's not really a program, and to have a strong program, I think that we need to have at least several faculty advising students as major professor and fully involved in it so that the students can get the benefit of a variety of different perspectives, a variety of different areas of expertise as they move through their program.
May I speak one last time? So one of the things that I think has really changed, I'm sure people are not familiar, and I certainly hope they're not familiar with the machinations of the Math and Statistics Department, but Sergey Donin was hired to build up the PhD program, and it's been a rough road at times, I have to say. I don't remember what year it was recruited. It was before I was hired. And subsequently, we've had five hires, and I know at least four of them are interested, at least, in mentoring a PhD student. I think we haven't been active in recruitment and things like that, but I think there is actually interest in the faculty beyond Sergey. This was actually officially part of Sergey's job description, and it has not been a smooth ride.
All right, at this point, I'd like to get an idea of which direction people are thinking the Faculty Senate should move. So let's do this just informally by a show of hands, just to get an indication, okay? So we're not going to vote on the motion right now. I want to see whether the Faculty Senate wants to vote on this motion right now, first of all. So I'll ask you three questions. Do you want to vote on the motion as it stands? Do you want to amend the motion in some way? Do you want to table this for the future? Do you, et cetera, okay? So let's try those three first. So everybody who's ready to vote on this motion now, please raise your hands. Okay, I see six. Everyone who would like to amend this motion and then vote on it, raise your hands. Approximately the same, five or six. Okay. Those who would like to table this or postpone talk about an extension for this discontinuation, please raise your hands.
Two yeses here to table.
Okay, that one, and we've got about 12 or so here. So that one seems to be the most popular option.
The table?
Yes. All right. Would someone like to suggest a format for doing that? For how long? What would be the purpose of it, et cetera? Cecile, go ahead.
Well, I would say we should pick it up again at the next meeting, and if there is the wish to propose a sort of extended trial period of some sort, then that should come before the Senate as a motion at that point.
All right. Any discussion of that or alternate suggestions? David.
One thing that might be helpful is if we do table this and we pick it up, if there's an actual substitution or something like that, so that there's something that we can actually concretely talk about.
So we're talking about a plan?
What do you mean? I don't know what you mean here.
So a substitute wording for what the you'd like the Faculty Senate to do.
Just a question. Jennifer, this is Mike here in Dillingham. Was
yes,
there
hi,
a motion? Did you accept a motion to table?
Not yet. But maybe just about.
Just about. We're trying to get a sense of what people's desires are and what options we should be talking about. And yes, then we can vote on the motion to table. Vote yes or no on that.
I think actually a motion to table probably isn't debatable, but I think it's you're right. A motion to table to time certain or what? That's basically what you're trying to find out. But I don't think we can really debate on whether or not to table, right?
Well, right. Okay. We haven't actually had a formal motion for that, but also what I'm trying to do is get a clear picture of what the Senate wants to do, and to vote on that before we finish the discussion I think is not where I want to go. Margaret, you have a comment?
Jennifer, I'm a total rookie at all of this. I don't really know how the rules and stuff work, but I would very much like to confer with my colleagues from the Math and Statistics Department. Is there a chance we could bring this up very quickly after the break, because I think we're about ready for one now?
That's a good suggestion. Let's do that. We'll have the break, and we will resume this discussion right after the break. Thank you, Margaret.
They walk out of here thinking that they want to fix it. This is a whatever we do here is a relatively minor part of the whole process. Yep. Right.
So there are only four members. One of them is the motion.
Well, I do think it's problematic. Yeah, but it's, I mean, it's a very different. I still think it's problematic for that piece to be well, then, but then they, as a department, they need to come up. I mean, you know,
right.
This doesn't do it. If you want it, you got to work for it.
If they're doing a PhD in mathematics, there's nothing to stop them taking your statistical stuff. Nothing stopping them taking something in art, mathematical programming. There's nothing stopping them taking those areas as long as they have enough something mathematical to be done on the other study. Mathematics is their main one, mathematics
of specialization. I think
there's enough classes in the college.
But you can also say, well, there is a probation program with a with a specific plan. Well, I didn't think about it. I did not realize that. The agenda looks so short today.
You never know what it's going to end up in.
Guess what? That was an open one. But there's a lot of, I feel like, undue pressure on the math department. Like, in 3 years, like,
but it's not about you as an individual.
It's not. It's acceptable to us.
How is it?
Right, but as a department, you have to get real at some point. But it's not like only we're higher education. Like,
right.
It's not about that. It does seem like you need more of but it sounds like they Right, yeah, I'm getting a lot of pressure from the legislature. I'm here. What are you doing with this program? I don't think we can be like so relaxed about it. Because I don't understand what tabling is.
How many of them have
But I think it sounds like they want to table it and back into that. Better have to get into
But maybe 3 months, or maybe 1 month. What I'm saying is, like, I mean, are we tabling it so much? And this is like
Well, and you, very quick, right? And if you
math, then that's a pretty clear sign that you're going to pass. Then it doesn't matter what the
faculty is. Where did this motion come from? Who proposed it? No.
Even though they take mathematics.
But again,
Somebody else who wants a PhD can't get one because
at some point,
that's kind of odd.
But if we want governance, then we have to start with that. Well, you know, I mean, we can't just say yes to all the fun stuff. We're part of governance.
Resume the meeting. Everyone, please take your seats. All right, we're resuming discussion on this motion to discontinue the motion to agree to discontinuation of the PhD degree in mathematics. I believe there is some further discussion on this. Margaret Short has a comment. Does anyone else have a comment? Yes, go ahead.
I just am a little bit worried about the three-year time frame that's proposed, because I think it puts undue pressure on the math department to try to really hastily recruit PhD students and possibly accept students that won't succeed or that, you know, don't meet, you know, their standards. And I guess I don't quite understand why we'd even consider eliminating a PhD program, and then if we consider it, why we'd put a short time frame or even allow them to put a short time frame on themselves and undue pressure that would possibly result in, you know, substandard results.
Okay. Cecile, go ahead.
But the time frame is really much longer, because they had gotten very explicit feedback from the provost 5 or 6 years ago. So the time frame is much longer. Another comment I have is that I think a suspension is probably not a good idea, because if the program is suspended, you can't build it. So if there was any time frame, it would have to be something of a probationary period so the program can continue to function. You know, if you're suspended, you're basically ceasing activity, which is not at all what they need to do.
As I understand it, the 3 years is to come up with a plan.
Just as a point of order, we currently are not considering any motion having to do with 3 years anything.
Well, I also wanted to point out, I mean, if you look at math programs across the country, these are not high numbers of PhDs anywhere. So, you know, 6 students in 6 years is not actually bad for math.
Margaret, did you have a comment?
The comment I'd like to make, this is a huge decision in terms of the direction that the math and statistics department are going to take. And I think that we in the department need more time to talk about specifics and to try and come up with a proposal that we think will pass muster with you guys. And for this reason, I'd like to table the motion until our next meeting in December.
We have a motion to table this. Is there a second? Jane? Thank you. All right. Then we need to vote on this. All those in favor of tabling the motion until our December meeting, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? One abstention. All right. We will put this on the agenda for the December meeting.
Now, my suspicion, however, is that what we're really looking for the next meeting is an alternate motion.
Correct. Well, at least we are looking for further explanation as to what would be done if the program were not discontinued.
Okay. But we're certainly looking for something more than just saying, okay, we're going to bring it up next meeting.
Yes. Yes.
Everyone's agreed to that?
Yeah.
And in part, what we're doing is we don't want to craft something on the floor here. And since it is clear that the Senate is not comfortable with what we've got, we will work on that.
But we don't want to craft something on the floor in the December either.
Correct.
Well, this is Mike here in Dillingham. I just want to say I appreciate people from the math department coming and talking to us today. I think we appreciate that input, and I think we should all welcome that kind of involvement by the faculty.
Yes, very much so. Thank you. David, did you have a comment?
Well, I was just going to kind of emphasize what I think Reiner just said, which is I think it would be really important for the discussion to really work next time is for there to be a concrete, either a new motion or an amendment to this motion that's proposed.
Yes, and one way we've done this in the past is we have sometimes come in with several options that are written down, people can read them, look at them, and then select between options and then vote on the most popular option. So there are several ways we can approach this. Yes, go ahead, Elizabeth.
I just have a Robert's Rules of Law question, Rules of Law and Order, whatever they're called. So who puts forth
motions and who phrases them? How do they get to be considered by the Faculty Senate?
These motions to discontinue programs are coming from the Administrative Committee of the Faculty Senate, and you can talk to me as the Faculty Senate President or to David Valentine as President-elect about the motions that will come before the Senate next month. Yes, Tony.
So the department will be very happy to work with either or both of you with proposing language for the next meeting and working with our department senator as well.
Good. Yes, Ken?
Has this gone through any discussion at the Graduate Economic Advisory Committee?
No. It had some of these graduate motions had gone to the committee. The committee was not had not been taking them up, or at least not in a definitive way. The committee has a lot to do. And when we looked at the policy for program review, it was clear to us that the Faculty Senate as a whole needed to look at this. So we bypassed the Graduate Academic Committee and brought it directly to Faculty Senate. All right, let's move on. Thank you all very much for this discussion. Our next item is a discussion on commencement. This has been an issue in the Faculty Senate for a little over a year now. I intend for this to be our last discussion, okay? We are not submitting a formal motion here. What I'm trying to do instead is get a sense of the situation and of people's advice on the matter. So you all have seen the two options or the two questions that have been submitted about commencement. The first question is whether to move it from Sunday to Saturday, starting in 2014. The second question is whether to hold a separate graduation ceremony for master's degrees, possibly with PhD as well. And that particular suggestion right now is framed around holding all the commencement activities on one day. So this would be one activity in a series of activities on commencement day. What I'd like to do is get a sense of you and the people you represent, the faculty you represent. Would you be more likely to attend commencement, less likely, or does it not matter if commencement is on Saturday rather than Sunday? All right? So I'm going to give you three options: more likely to attend on Saturday, less likely to attend on Saturday, or it doesn't matter. And this is for you and the people you represent. Okay? So let's see a show of hands, please, for more likely to attend on Saturday. Nobody.
I'd rather do Saturday, just out of respect for people over religious leaning.
Okay.
For other groups of people.
Okay. And I think we're talking about the Fairbanks ceremony right now. That's correct. So let's make that clear. And those of you who would be less likely to attend if commencement were on a Saturday, please raise your hands. All right. One. It's the first indication we've gotten. And please raise your hand if it does not matter whether if that's what everybody says. Okay.
It does not matter.
Does not matter. The entire room's hands went up with maybe three exceptions. So that's overwhelmingly the answer on Sunday and Saturday. The next question is about holding a separate graduation ceremony for master's degrees, possibly with PhDs, possibly not. Chancellor Rogers, do you want to say something about that?
Just a note, the proposal that had come forward was a separate robing ceremony for master's, not for doctorate. At least I haven't had anybody suggest we would not have the doctorate robing as part of the main ceremony.
Okay. So then not including doctorate, just the master's degrees. And the purpose of this is to provide better recognition of the master's degrees, increasing the recognition that they get over the bachelor's degree level graduates. So all those in favor of holding a separate
Now, let me point out that one of the considerations here is that we don't want to decrease attendance at the main ceremony. And that is a danger if we hold a separate master's degree ceremony. Both attendance by the students and by their faculty mentors and by the department's faculty.
Can I ask you something?
Cecile.
I may be just completely off base right now, but I know at some point we had mentioned the possibility of the certificates and AAs holding a separate ceremony. Is that still on the table, or is that have we passed that somewhere?
That was suggested in our last meeting. I don't think we ever held a discussion of it. Is that something that's under consideration?
That's not been proposed other than mentioned in discussion at the last meeting. There's been no specific proposal. The only specific proposals were the move from Sunday to Saturday and a robing ceremony for masters prior to the commencement ceremony, which would include the master's students.
Yeah, so they would be asked to march in the main ceremony, having already gotten their robes. All right. So let's get a show of hands on this question. All those in favor of holding a separate master's ceremony and then asking those students and their faculty to also march in the main one, please raise your hands. All those opposed to this? Okay, so we're getting some commitment here. fair number of you are opposed. Can some of you please state why you're opposed?
Just right now, I don't understand. Master's going to be you could call it separate. I would say additional if it was going to be additional, because if I say the word separate, in my mind, thinks we're going to have certificates, bachelor's, no master's, PhDs, master's are going to be separate. If master's were included and walking in the standard ceremony, and then there would be an additional ceremony to promote the work they've done in their master's, that's very different than calling in the word separate, because that means you're separating them out of the rest of the university.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I had used the wrong word. I should have been saying additional.
Okay.
That's what's intended.
So I'd like to change my raising.
Okay, so we try this again? Yeah, so go ahead, Ken.
I think that there's a lot of carryover. Faculty teach both the undergraduate and the master's students, and it's hard enough a lot of times getting faculty from school to attend the one ceremony. Now, the time seems to be the issue, and I would think it would be much more logical to have a separate master's robing and keep it within and separate out the two-year certificates that the faculty that are involved with the two-year certificates are not as connected with the bachelor's and graduate students as the undergraduate, the four-year degree faculty are associated with the graduate faculty. I think there's a natural alignment between the four-year faculty and the graduate faculty where there's not, at least in my area, doesn't seem to be that alignment between the 1 and 2 year certificates and associates faculty with the four-year faculty.
Cecile.
Okay, now I agree I should have come up with this a little earlier, but another idea, because I've seen this at another universities where and they actually do it for PhDs because it's a much larger institution, where all of the degree recipients sit with their faculty advisors, and then they all get hooded at the same time. So it's kind of a collective hooding of all of the, in this case, probably the master's students. So that would be in the main ceremony, but it would cut down on the time. So it would be, so we acknowledge all of our master's students. They're all going to be hooded at the same time by their faculty advisors.
Yeah, if I could comment on that, I think what Cecile gets at with that new suggestion gets at what the genesis of the original request that we consider something separate is, that we essentially have been treating master's the same as a baccalaureate degree and not recognizing that extra achievement. And the whole idea of an additional ceremony was to recognize that it is that it does go further, and that it's a closer faculty relationship at the master's level. And so, in looking at the way the hands were around here, I think I'll take it back to those who were originally looking at this and say, are there other ways that we might be able to do it without adding time over the course of the day?
Debu?
This is again a suggestion.
We do have an hour's breakfast for the undergraduates, and that could be an occasion when we can invite the master student and rope them, and that way we can eliminate some time. This is, again, a fluke suggestion.
Okay. Any other comments? Yes, Brian.
You had asked about why people voted the way they just voted. So I've attended many graduation ceremonies. I've actually even graduated as with a master's degree from UAF, actually, and gone through the ceremony. Personally, you know, I don't feel like I was slighted by the mechanism that exists and still exists. But, you know, from a time standpoint, I think one ceremony, one kind of deal works better for me personally. I don't know how anybody else feels. Also, my other comment is I'm pretty sure I'll give people credit for understanding what they were voting on like 10 minutes ago. I don't think there was any misconception about what we were actually voting on. Although I will concede the semantic point.
All right, so Chancellor has his advice from the Faculty Senate.
Thank you. Can I just say one point?
Yeah,
we voted on, you know, if faculty were willing to come on Saturday, Sunday. But I would just like to say something from a faculty member who has to bring approximately 40 to 50 students to the commencement. It would be a lot easier for me to get them to agree to be there on the Saturday.
And you're talking about the music provided at
I'm talking about the music provided. I provide a wind ensemble, and for them to stay that Sunday, some of them have to work on Monday morning. They live in Anchorage or the Kenai or wherever. And they, you know, it would be a lot easier for me to have it on the Saturday in terms of providing music with the students.
Good comment. Thank you. Ken?
Any mothers would also appreciate having it on Saturday.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the next item in the agenda. Next, and yes, we have about 15 minutes left in the meeting.
So this will go quick.
But this is the one that we postponed from last meeting, so we're getting to it now. The topic is posting course syllabi online in a central repository. You all have seen a page-long summary of this issue that I sent around last month. There has been no discussion of this online, except I think a comment from the libraries that they would be happy to work with us on this in implementing a repository. The current suggestion is, or the favorite of the Faculty Alliance and those who discussed this actively, was to create a Blackboard shell that contains course syllabi for all courses, and this would be one per course. It would be the most recent one that could be posted. These would be posted by the administrative staff who have access to all of our syllabi, and they're supposed to be up to date. These would be stamped with the year that they apply to. So if it was the previous year's syllabus, it would be stamped with that as, you know, sort of a watermark format, so that it's clear to anyone looking at it that it's not the syllabus for the upcoming course, it's the syllabus for the most recent one. And the purpose of doing this is to provide more information to students and their advisors, including their faculty advisors, when they're selecting courses. There was resistance to posting these syllabi on a public website. Putting it inside of Blackboard makes these syllabi available to anyone with a UA sign-on, but it's not on the public web. So that was one reason this particular solution was seen more favorably than others. So do we have any discussion of this here at the Senate meeting? Does anybody want to comment on whether you are in favor, opposed, if there's a different option that you preferred? Yes, Jane.
I just have a question. So if they'd be posted by administrative staff to the Blackboard site, but we're talking about moving to a different...
I've asked about this, too, because, in fact, the choice of Blackboard and other options was discussed in the same meeting that we discussed this. And the answer from Carl Kowalski was that it would be very easy to migrate something like this to another system. This is simply a directory of syllabi with some sort of menu option to get to the course that you're looking for. And so this kind of thing is not difficult to migrate if we went to Moodle or something else. Yes, Debu?
I know that this has been discussed. I just wanted to ask, is this some way of standardizing courses over the campuses or over the universities or anything of that sort?
No, there's nothing like that intended. This is just an intent to make information available.
Okay. So as a follow-up, why can't a student take a syllabi from the Blackboard and send it off to Oregon?
I mean, that send it off to what?
Oregon or Washington
State.
Oh,
Oregon. Uh-huh.
Yeah. They can do that. And in course of time, those syllabi are available everywhere in the country. Mm-hmm. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? That I don't know. Okay, so there are risks to posting syllabi. Second thing is you can be held accountable if your name is on there, okay, that this syllabi came from Alaska to Florida. And Florida is good at recounting things, so they will recount and hold you accountable for that. So there are risks. We need to really move slow on this one,
mm-hmm.
rethink the options before we go, because it can affect faculty. That's my major point.
Thank you. And I have been concerned about some of those topics, too. One thing I will do after this meeting is send around the link, or maybe the document itself, to a new article in the AAUP magazine, Academe. It's a very good one on copyright, and one of the items that it discusses thoroughly is the issue of syllabi migrating onto the public web. And so there's a good discussion in there about why you would want to put them online and what the risks are. So I'll send that around for people to think about over the next month. Okay. Any more about, we'll get back to this. This is just to open the discussion for this topic today. Oh, Cindy. Sorry, I didn't see her.
Just a question, too. At one point we were talking about sample syllabi rather than everybody's syllabi, and I'm thinking about a number of courses that are taught by adjuncts or graduate students, and how would you deal with the fact that those, you know, in different sections, let's say, of English 111, you might have slight variations in the syllabus, or you might have be posting a syllabus by someone who's not a full-time faculty or not going to be there in another year, for example?
Well, the point, I think, of posting these is to show what the course content is. And so any adjunct teaching it is supposed to be teaching a particular content, right?
Right. A better example would be the world literature, where the content may vary, although the approach to teaching might be similar.
Okay. Well, the department could choose to post additional ones. I think there are solutions to that, and it's a good point. But if what is done is to post the most recent syllabi for a course, then those by default should be the most up to date. One could post more than one. If there are more than one faculty. Yeah, so those are good points. So if we're comfortable with the concept overall, I think that would be the next set of things to iron out.
And so is it part of our intent that students could teacher shop using these syllabi?
They would be able to, yes. John?
I think there are some valid concerns about liability or proprietary issues of a syllabus, or potentially even almost like trade secrets. And as we're saying here, one of the things that this is supposed to do is provide the student information about the course content. So would we have to post an actual syllabus that was used per se, or would it be better to have like a syllabus form that is filled out every year? We will do this, 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 but not specifically state, on this date there's this, using this person's work or this it doesn't have to be that specific in order to expose ourselves to liability or people taking off with our stuff, or you know, down to Oregon, as was mentioned. But if we could provide what the student is looking for, the course content, but in a neutral, standardized way, that would also make it a lot easier for the student to search and parse that information, because we all know our syllabi, they do, we're supposed to have a coherent form, but they do vary significantly from place to place.
Okay.
And that might alleviate a lot of the problems at once.
And
isn't that what the course catalog is designed to do?
It's too brief.
Well, couldn't that... So
We also would not necessarily be restricted to one or the other. Someone, like, say, the faculty member could make a choice. Do you want to... Because you would be asking the faculty member to fill out a new form. Some of them might prefer to just stick their syllabus up there. Yep, okay. Cecile.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of the people who has severe doubts about the idea of posting syllabi for a number of reasons. But I wouldn't be opposed to having more expanded course descriptions that, you know, I personally don't want students shopping for courses with the least amount of, you know, assignments and the least amount of reading or whatever. But, you know, if they're interested in understanding what the course will cover in terms of topics and content, I'm happy to provide that.
Any other comments on this?
What it almost sounds like is that it would be good to simply post course objectives, student learning objectives. That's a relevant thing that the students aren't necessarily teacher shopping if they look at that. Well, it's all this other stuff that they're is very likely going to be teacher shopping from. And yet the description by itself doesn't tell a lot. But the objectives really tell a lot about what's going to, you know, what's expected. Now, the method of teaching those objectives is a whole different thing.
Okay. All right, we need to move on. Okay, so we'll come back to this next month. We've got about 7 minutes left in the meeting. Yeah, okay. All of which, please, should be devoted to our next topic. I really apologize, Danny. I didn't mean to put you last in the meeting. The next topic is athletics and attendance policy. And the two people discussing this are Rainer Newberry and Danny Shepherd. Danny, please take it away.
I'm actually going to let Rainer start.
I'm hoping that you've all received, passed around over the last 10 minutes, a piece of paper. You've also received an email. We hope to bring this up for approval at the December meeting, and it's here for you to start thinking about it and potentially ask questions about it. The biggest single change that's subtle is the proposed new policy doesn't say anything about military exercises. And it makes it clear that ultimately we can beg faculty members to help students who must be gone due to UAF-related mandatory activities, but that's all we really can do is beg. We put this together, Joint Curricular Activities, Curricular Affairs Committee, and an ad hoc committee consisting of several people who have a relationship with the Department of Athletics. Danny's one of the major players here, and she wants to talk to you for a few minutes, too.
So just briefly, just wanted to say that the history behind this works to create a balance between academic integrity, academic freedom, and the protection of the students who are required to miss class for representing UAF in an official capacity. So overall, those were the things we were trying to balance I introduced myself to you at the last meeting in terms of being in a very unique position to be able to represent the interests of both the student athletes as well as faculty. And so that's been our task in terms of this revision. While it was initiated in terms of the issues revolving around student athletes, the main emphasis was to make sure that it was a policy that applied to all students and certainly to protect all students that are required to miss class. So what we're interested in are any comments and questions so that as we work on developing the final draft to come to you for a vote in December, what other questions and comments you have. Reiner, do you want me to take the questions?
We can point at each other depending upon how ugly they are.
Okay, great.
So, I mean, this is really to both of you. What were some of the considerations that went into this particular proposal?
I can start with that, Reiner, if you'd like. We were very interested in making sure that the emphasis was on academic achievement, placing the focus on the learning objectives within the classroom, maintaining the authority of faculty to set their own policies within a very clear context of expectation that there is an honest, good faith effort to arrange for alternative opportunities, to provide clarity on the timeline of when students are supposed to notify instructors, and to maintain a level of simplicity around the language so that it didn't end up being a two-page policy. Did that answer your question? David?
Danny, I had some discussion with Sina about this one. So my question is that is it required? And I don't see that here, but I'm just kind of, was there an expectation that the faculty have to, cover up or teach the class to the students after they come back? Was that an expectation in this particular change or not? That's one thing. Let's start with that.
This document says that before the end, before drop date,
yes,
the student has discussed with the faculty member what the faculty member is willing to do.
Okay.
If the faculty member is willing to do XYZ, it's going to work out fine, everything's cool. If the faculty member feels that the absences are going to make succeeding in the class not possible, the faculty member will say, I'm sorry, you'll need to drop this class.
Okay, good. So it's upon the faculty member.
Like I said, it was trying to find a balance between protecting the students who are required to miss class, but also maintaining the authority at the level of the faculty to set their policies and determine, is the student going to be able to succeed? We certainly don't want to be an institution full of faculty who are eliminating select students from their classes on a regular basis, but we also don't want to impose upon faculty academic freedom by saying, you must. So trying to find that balance, I think this creates that expectation with the protection as well.
I think I'd like some clarification. You're asking for comments about what you might improve. And you've used the word required absence every single time. And there are many instances. We're a research university, and we're supposed to be promoting undergraduate research, and there are many undergraduate research opportunities for kids nowadays. And certainly attendance at a conference to present a paper or a poster is not required, but I would argue that it is certainly important and kind of equivalent importance, actually, to athletic performance and other things. And so I have a semantic point, and that is this word required. I believe that, although it's a personal opinion, that people should make a good faith effort to work with kids that want to do these other types of, kind of professional development activities, which are really important for their kind of learning in the discipline.
Point taken, absolutely. We spent so much time talking about this, and our main attempt was to separate out the first paragraph and the second paragraph. So the second paragraph addresses that required absence. The first paragraph would allow the other instances to fall into that We talked specifically about undergraduate research and where we had trouble with coming up with wording of how to separate that out from something like a particular club that is representative of the university is how do we, where do we draw that line? And so we saw the instances of what would be a good value to students, especially in terms of undergraduate research, would fall under that first paragraph where students would basically still have, if you must miss a class for whatever reason, then it, you still have to talk to your professor about that. So
right.
What we
I mean,
did want to do was set up one academic program against another, where if you're doing undergraduate research in one program, that you're basically setting that academic program up against another and saying, I have to miss class for this academic program.
Right. I may not have read that completely thoroughly, but in every instance that I think I noticed it, it always says something like, for example, athletic something.
Okay. The first sentence there of the second paragraph is a key one. And the first part of it, if you must miss class for an academic requirement.
In an official capacity.
No. Or to represent in an official capacity. Keyword there is or.
Well, okay, so it's an academic requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Attendance at these things is not a requirement.
Assuming that, for example, the student is signed up for an undergraduate research.
Well, let's assume that they're not, but they still want to go to a
that
conference.
That would fall into the
important.
First paragraph.
Yeah.
Okay? So again, the key problem here is to what... At what level do we say, sure? So the first paragraph basically says, you're going to miss class, talk it over with the instructor, clear it. Okay. The second paragraph says, if you have to miss it for one of these reasons, we really encourage the instructor to make every possible effort to see that it can work out. Okay. The difference fundamentally is that we've singled out some activities that we're begging faculty to make happen. The first paragraph simply covers what do you do if it doesn't fall in this category of we beg.
Right, but the wording says if you must. I mean, I hate to be a lawyer here, but you know, if you must do something.
If you must miss class because I'm going to a conference.
But must implies there's a connotation there that it's required in some way.
Right,
when
in order to be
optional.
At the conference, I have to miss class. The two are incompatible in space-time physics.
But no student must miss class because they have to attend these things. They are choosing to do so, which I think is an admirable thing. I'm just saying the wording is, I mean, I hate to, I despise
Thank
myself
you.
For bringing
Thank
it up.
Thank you. We'll take it under advice. Thank you.
Thanks for your thoughts, Brian. Appreciate that.
Hopefully this is addressing the same issue. If you replace the must with are scheduled to in the
say that one again
in the second paragraph. So if you must miss class would become if you are scheduled to miss class, or yada 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 yada. Because the scheduling is the really important part. Actually, in particular, I sometimes have students that they're not scheduled to miss class until they win the regionals and then they get sent off to the CCDC finals, for example, and we don't know that until well after them first. Or the first Wednesday of the semester.
Thank you. Cecile?
Well, I think the problem with all of these policies is that there are all kinds of sort of extenuating circumstances and situations. Nobody can, you know, predict or whatever. And at some point, we have to sort of rely on our faculty having some common sense and saying, you know, there's a student who... it's an honor to go to a conference, and I'm going to work with that student. To some extent, the question is, what does the policy really have to address, and what is then there beyond that where we kind of have to rely on the professionalism of our faculty?
Okay, if there are no more comments, this was a discussion session. We will see a more formal proposal at a future meeting. Next item on our agenda is public comments and questions. Do we have any comments from the public? Seeing none, moving on to governance reports. I know that staff council is not represented here today. Is there anyone from ASUAF? UNAC, Dibu, would you like to make a report?
Yes, quick comments. You all must have received the JHCC The proceedings from UNAC. If you haven't, I will be more than happy to forward those to you and to your colleagues. In the next meeting, we can give more report on the JHCC. So in the interest of time, I'm stopping it here.
All right. Thank you. UAFT, Jane, do you want to make any remarks?
I just want to say what Debu said.
What Debu said. All right. Thank you. We appreciate that. And are there any urgent announcements or comments on other matters from the members of the Senate? Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.
I would say that's true kind of regardless. So, like, if you're going to miss class for any reason, regardless.